From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Corey Flintoff, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you, Corey. Great to have you back. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We have got such a good show for you today. Champion surfer Kelly Slater will be joining us later. We're going to give him some tips, you know, because we hang 10 here. But first, everybody knows there's been a bit of a breakdown in civility pretty much across the country. We'll be getting into that later. But we thought, just to be safe, before we start today's show, we needed to go over the rules before we begin.
Blah!
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry.
Just trying to keep everything in order. There's some rules. Basically, here's the rule. If Corey Flintoff right here, he's filling in for the vacationing Carl Castle. If Corey Flintoff makes a judgment as to who wins our prize, it's final, and you can't argue with it, no matter how good Beyoncé's answer might have been. All right? So just be cool about it. All right, let's go. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Josh Wheatley in Maryville, Tennessee.
Hey, Josh, how are you?
Doing great.
And what do you do there?
I work for a pharmaceutical wholesaler, so I'm a drug dealer for mom-and-pop drugstores.
Really?
Yep.
How shady.
Yeah, that's how I roll.
There you go, baby. Well, welcome to our show, Josh. Let me introduce you to this week's panel. First, say hello to a television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning. Mr. Mo Rocca is right here.
Hey, Mo.
Hi, Josh.
Also, say hello to the woman behind the advice column, Ask Amy, and the author of the memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Amy.
Hey, Josh.
Also, say hello to a humorist and the author most recently of Alphabet Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hey, Roy.
Hey, Josh.
Well, welcome to our show, Josh. You're going to start us off with Who's Corey this time. Corey Flintoff, filling in for Carl, is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you win the prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Fantastic. Right. I'm ready.
Here's your first quote.
I think it's a bad precedent to put us in charge of deciding whether people act like jerks.
That was Congressman Barney Frank, a Democrat, expressing some unease about a historic measure that was passed by Democrats this week, expressing, quote, disapproval of whom?
Joe Wilson.
Exactly right. Congressman Joe Wilson of South Carolina. Very good. After shouting, you lie, at President Obama in the House chamber last week, Mr. Wilson apologized to the president because he said he was sorry, and besides, John Boehner wouldn't let him borrow his spray-on tan again unless he did it. But, somewhat surprisingly, House Democrats were not satisfied, so they brought to the floor a resolution expressing, quote, disapproval of Mr. Wilson, not censure, not anger, disapproval. As Barney Frank predicted, it turned out to be a bad precedent. The House Democrats went on to pass resolutions about other things they disapproved of. They overwhelmingly disapprove of Kate Gosselin's new hairdo. And just before they adjourned, the House passed a resolution declaring they were totally creeped out by Dennis Kucinich making out with his wife in the cloakroom.
You know, I did not hear Wilson holler, you lie. I just heard him holler, lie. And I thought he was trying to get Obama to start lying because he was making everybody else look bad.
So you thought it was...
Yeah.
Like a direction.
You thought it was kind of a friendly encouragement.
No, yeah. Like, stop telling the truth. Good Lord. How do you think that makes us feel out here in the Congress? We don't know what to do.
I'm disappointed. I mean, you lie. It's just so kind of drab and unimaginative. I mean, the guy's from the South.
Like
fiddle-dee-dee. Or balderdash or something like that.
Hogwash is better than fiddle-dee-dee. Yeah. I
mean, jacuzzi.
All right, very good, Josh. Here's your next quote.
Baucus compromise bill draws enthusiastic support of Senator Max Baucus.
That was political analyst Nate Silver summing up the response to Senator Max Baucus's much ballyhooed compromise bill about what?
Health care reform.
Indeed. Very good. Health care. This week, Senator Max Baucus, Democrat of Montana, finally revealed the amazing health care compromise that he has been working on all year, the one that was going to save us all and unite all the warring parties. As it turns out, measured against expectations, it was the phantom menace of legislative proposals. However, Baucus did achieve one of his goals. He was able to unify both parties, liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans, both loathe it. In fact, at his press conference announcing his plan, Baucus couldn't get a single other senator to stand next to him.
Aww. Terrible for him.
It wasn't bipartisan. It was sans partisan.
It was Charlie Brown-ish.
Yeah, it was. But it occurred to us, maybe he's going about this the wrong way. There is, in fact, we now know, a proven way to get a group of argumentative egotists to work hard over a short period of time to accomplish something difficult. A reality show. Call it Project Healthcare. You set all the senators and the finance committee to come up with their own plans, and you send in Tim Gunn to tell them, make it work. By the end, you'd have Senator Baucus using a bedazzler to really sparkle up his insurance co-ops.
You know, I actually thought the Baucus plan was okay, but, I mean, it's nothing compared to Beyonce's healthcare plan.
It really isn't.
But, you know, it was so sad. It was like he was like that kid who worked really, really, really hard on his diorama.
Yes.
And he takes it in, and his teacher says, I can tell you worked really hard on that, you know.
Aw, you call that a diorama? Yeah, well, it wasn't much of a health plan, was it? I mean, we're taking Baucus's side, but if he had come out with something worth being hated for, it would be a lot better.
Well, that seems to be the problem, is that he's trying not to be hated over much by everyone, and
right.
The end result
there
is that everyone hates
you.
Well,
Roy, how do you know? Have you tried Max Baucus's health plan?
I read over part of it, and I began to feel queasy. So,
but that was a pre-existing condition.
That's true, yes.
All right, very good, Josh. Here's your last quote.
Taylor, I'm really happy for you, and I'm going to let you finish, but Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
That was somebody who stole headlines by stealing Taylor Swift's microphone away at the Video Music Awards. Who was it?
Kanye West.
Kanye West, yes. Every year, something happens at the VMAs, it seems, to grab everybody's attention. Wonder why that happens. This year, Mr. West was the one to do it. He leapt to the stage. He grabbed the mic away from young Ms. Swift, who was just about to thank all the music industry scientists who had bred her in their lab.
Mean, mean.
What?
She's just a child.
She's just a child. She's perfect.
She's a perfect child.
She is a perfect little... country
yes. You see what
singing
I mean?
Machine.
Exactly.
She is.
Yeah. That's not natural how perfect she is. Of course, by the way, I don't know if anybody noticed this, but Beyonce wasn't even nominated for the award that Ms. Swift won.
Oh, is that right?
It's true. She wasn't even one of the nominees. Anyway, this whole thing became this week's media sensation. Everybody condemned Kanye West. Even President Obama, in what he thought was an off-the-record moment, said on tape, he's a jackass, which caused Representative Joe Wilson to leap up and shout, you swear mildly! Reflex at this point.
This was like, it was this week in rudeness.
It was crazy.
Like, I want a modern-day breakfast club with Joe Wilson, Serena Williams, and Kanye West.
Yeah.
All have to get together and shove tennis balls down each other's throats.
Corey, how did Josh do on our show?
Josh got all three right and wins Carl Castle's voice on his home answering machine.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Thanks so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The drama, people suing me. I'm on TV talking like it's just you and me. I'm just saying how I feel, man. I ain't one of the Cosby's.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Amy, good news for some authors on public policy, including some professors at Harvard and the University of Chicago, as well as former President Jimmy Carter. Their books were recommended by a well-known international opinion leader. Who?
Was it Osama bin Laden?
It was, in fact, Osama bin Laden.
Wow.
Just like... Oprah, bin Laden has both an army of fanatic followers ready to carry out his every whim and a book club. This is at least the second time the terrorist leader has recommended a book through one of his internet videos. This time it's a book on the Israeli lobby in America and Jimmy Carter's book on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Bin Laden's blurb on Mr. Carter's book, quote, "It's a thrill ride of action across occupied Palestine. I laughed, I cried, I renewed my devotion to jihad. Four beards."
Which other books does he recommend?
Well, on the video, he recommended a third book, but he mangled the title. Nobody's sure what he was talking about. Al-Qaeda experts think it was either a critique of capitalism or Eat, Pray, Love. And they're not sure which would make him look worse, ultimately.
It's Eat, Pray, Hate.
Exactly.
But isn't it kind of amazing that, you know, he can elude capture for such a long time?
Yeah.
And he's got a website and everything, but
he's got a library card, you know?
Right. Yeah. But
ask Amazon where he is. They're shipping books to him every month. He only picked up Jimmy Carter's book because with that one he got super safer shipping.
That's right.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, everybody. It is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, Peter. This is Mario Robles of Framingham, Massachusetts.
Hey, how are things in Framingham?
Oh, just wonderful.
What do you do there?
I'm a husband, a father, and a sales rep for a bicycle company.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
You're selling bicycles?
I sell bicycles to bicycle shops, yeah.
Right. And are you guys coming up with anything really cool, like a bicycle with more than two wheels, for example?
Like a tricycle?
Yeah, well... Wait a minute. You mean somebody's already thought of that?
Amazing, isn't it?
Well, welcome to the show, Mario. Now, you're going to play our game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Corey, what is Mario's topic?
In search of... Oh, there it is.
Who doesn't love a good mystery? That's why it's always a little disappointing when we actually find the answer to the most mysterious questions. Our panelists will now tell you three tales of mysterious phenomena that turn out to have really mundane explanations. Only one of them is true, though, and if you pick that true story from the fake, you'll win Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine or your voicemail. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Let's hear from Amy Dickinson.
The first time the Virgin Mary visited Moline, Texas, she was sketched in oil, Quaker State oil, on the highway overpass. When passing cars noticed Mary's unmistakable visage during their morning rush hour, by noon a shrine had popped up. Pilgrims started to gather. Then, 3 days later, the Virgin Mary appeared again, this time baked into a piece of lightly buttered rye toast over at the Moline Sip and Stew. More pilgrims. They sold out the local Motel 6. Mary's next visitation was when her face was mowed into the high school football field. And then the Archdiocese got involved. Some basic investigation revealed that Moline's Mary Palooza was really the brainchild of Charlene Tangle, head of the local Chamber of Commerce. Tangle's Double Wide was a virtual merrymaking factory.
Whoa.
Her motivations, though, were pure. The economy has been so bad, people were praying for a miracle, she said. And we got one, right? I just had to help it along a little bit.
A Mary appearing in Moline, Texas, not the right Mary, but a Mary nonetheless. Your next story of an unsolved mystery comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania media circles, the biggest mystery over the past year or so was what the beautiful TV newscaster Annalicia Menou could possibly see in her steady date, Linus Prosh. Linus was a head shorter and infinitely dumpier than the willowy Annalicia. His most striking feature, his peculiar hair. On top, it was sandy and flat, but his ample facial plumage was fluffy and ash blonde with a greenish tinge. Some observers suspected Linus of dyeing his whiskers to evoke his only topic of conversation, his business, an environmentally progressive hot dog stand called the Greener Wiener. Then it's an idea. Then, this week, scandal. Turned out Linus's visibility was a cover for Annalisa's torrid affair with a very married local megachurch pastor who also happened to be the Greener Wiener's principal investor. A local blogger came up with the best line. It turns out Linus not only had a funny-looking beard, he also was one.
An inexplicable relationship? Explained. Your last story of a mysterious phenomenon comes from Morocco.
What was that beautiful, sparkling glow stargazers saw trailing behind the space shuttle Discovery last week? No, the shuttle didn't have a leak. It was taking one. On that starry, starry night, pilot Kevin Ford dumped 10 days' worth of astronaut urine into space. Enough tang tinkle to fill a Big Dipper. It was, to be sure, gorgeous and only detectable by sight. Thank goodness the shuttle doesn't run on asparagus. But why had the shuttle waited so long to relieve itself? Was it having prostate problems? Turns out the International Space Station, where Discovery had been docked, wouldn't allow the shuttle to use the facilities. Still, was this necessary? Couldn't the shuttle have discreetly relieved itself in a black hole? We know that astronauts wear diapers. Why not the shuttle itself? If nothing else, this episode proves, no matter how much you jiggle and pace, the last few drops end up in space.
Tang tinkle, that's good. Yeah.
Well, that's what they call it in polite company.
Of course. Let me review your choices. From Amy Dickinson, the story of how the appearances of the Virgin Mary in a town in Texas were explained simply by finding the person who was creating them. From Roy Blunt Jr., how everybody's gossiping tongues about an unlikely relationship between a beauty and a beast was explained when it found out that it wasn't real. And from Mo Rocca, the story of what that beautiful golden light in the sky really was. Which of these is the real story of a mystery solved in the news?
Well, shouldn't Mo's answer been number one?
Ah, there you
go. Oh, very good. Oh.
I'll take Mo's answer.
You're going to go for Mo's answer. Mo's great golden light in the sky. All right, then. Well, we spoke to somebody who can tell us a little bit about this particular incident.
That wastewater turns to crystals immediately in space, and those are visible from Earth sometimes, depending on the lighting.
That was NASA spokesperson Kylie Clem explaining why people could see the remarkable golden light from the space shuttle. Congratulations, Mario. You got it right. You're into points for Mo Rocca. And you've won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I saw the light. I saw the light. No more darkness. No more night.
And now the game where we ask people who are experts in one field about their knowledge about something else entirely. Now, Kelly Slater may be the coolest person ever to appear on our show, other than Carl, of course. He's been both the youngest and oldest pro surfing champion, and he's going soon for his 10th total championship, a record. He's a musician, a scratch golfer, a serial dater of supermodels, one of People Magazine's 50 most beautiful people in the world, and he used to guest star on Baywatch. In fact, Mr. Slater knew he needed only one last thing to completely cement his historical reputation as coolest guy ever, so we're pleased to have him here. Kelly Slater, welcome to Wait, Wait.
I will, thank you.
So,
thank you for the overcooked introduction.
Oh, come on.
I'll prove to you that you're exaggerating because I'm definitely not a scratch golfer, but I...
That was even cool the way you said that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you notice about all the things I said? He says, oh, no, my golf game's not that good.
Yeah, that's right. Everything else is completely true.
He's like the supermodel. Yeah, but...
By association, all the other things were exaggerated as well.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, well,
so the supermodels you've dated, not supermodels, just kind of medium models, what?
Well, I dated one.
All right. Now, people, and I speak from experience, it's they have a hard time in their first time surfing. It's hard to get going. Was it hard for you, or did you just leap right onto it? Was it natural for you?
I was just young. You know, I basically, as soon as I could walk, I was at the beach, and my dad surfed, so I just kind of followed suit, and I think it was just kind of second nature for me. But, you know, I have friends who started when they were, like, 40 years old, and there's definitely a learning curve, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Tell me about it.
I don't understand how you stay on the board.
You push against the water, it pushes back. That's the basics. But
So there's no Velcro involved?
No,
there could be.
Hey, we've just been talking for a little while, but I can't help but notice you do not talk like the stereotypical surfer. You have not said dude once.
Well, the stereotypical surfer doesn't talk like the stereotypical surfer usually.
Really?
I do say dude, but I say it in, you know, it's like you know, I'm probably not going to cuss on your show, but around the right friends I would, you know. So it's really an environment that creates that, you know.
Right.
I'm sure that in my life I've said, dude, that is so gnarly.
And, really? You have?
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean, then?
Well, hello, man, fellow man.
Yes.
That was difficult.
Wow. It just occurs to me, you can act as a great ambassador from the surfing world to our world. You can translate. Now, it just so happens that I've got three daughters, and they tried surfing, and they loved it, and they're going to try it again, so they want to be surfers. And I want to get your advice, not so much on surfing per se, but on like surfing culture. How do you handle yourself? If you want to carry yourself like a surfer, remember to do what?
You know, I think it's just basically being respectful of other people when you're in the water. So if someone's been waiting longer than you for a wave, you generally let them have the wave. You know, just try to stay out of people's way. And,
you really do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Unless you're bigger than the other guy, then it doesn't matter.
Oh.
Aha.
All right.
Is the puka shell necklaces optional or are they required?
I think they went out in about 82 when I was 10 years old.
Peter, it's time to take yours off, honey.
I guess so.
You have problems with jellyfish or sharks or anything like that?
G-strings.
G-strings are a problem for you? In what way are they a threat to you, Mr. Slater?
They're distracting.
Yeah, well. So you're a man who spends an awful lot of time in the water, so when you're out of the water, when you can't surf for whatever reason, do you start to go nuts?
A little bit. You know, for me, it's like a withdrawal, you know. That's probably the best analogy, because for me, it's almost like torture if the waves are good and I can't surf.
Right.
If the waves are really good and I'm not able, for some reason, to surf, I probably act like some sort of, like a fiending drug addict or something.
Really? Since you spend so much time in the water, any tips for combating pruning?
Pruning?
Yes. You know, your fingers get all pruny and unattractive.
It's the fingers you're worried about?
Yeah, well. Well, you know, you can give any helpful tips you have if you've lifetime in the water.
I don't know. Get out of the water.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, Kelly Slater, we're so delighted to have you with us, and we have asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
Surfing's great, but are there nachos?
So you're the best in the world at surfing, but we wondered how much you knew about the real sport of kings, that is, bowling.
Mm. Oh, you want some of this?
I want some of this, baby.
All right.
I've heard you're competitive. Let's see. Answer three questions, or rather, answer two of three questions correctly about bowling. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their home answering machine.
I'll give you a very brief history of my bowling life.
Please, let's hear it.
I used to be on a bowling team in high school.
Yeah.
And we were called the Dudes.
Mm. Foreshadowing.
And I once bowled a 28.
No.
Here's what happened. I bowled a 29.
Yeah.
And it ended up in a surfing magazine. I think I was 17 years old, 16 years old. And in the surfing magazine, it was written that I bowled a 28, and I was kind of mad about it, because I was like, no, it was a 29. But I have since bowled a 225 once.
Oh, and, wow. All right, look, before we move on to the game, bowled a 225. Is there anything that you can't do well?
Well, throw your three questions at me.
All right, we'll see. Okay,
we can start there.
Let's see. Okay, well, Corey, who is Kelly Slater playing for?
Lisa Findlay of Mountain Brook, Alabama.
All right, here we go. Here's your first question. Bowling is popular everywhere, but only in America is the game played with 10 pins rather than 9. Why? A, Nine-pin bowling was banned in America in 1870 because of the gambling associated with it, so bowlers simply added a pin to get around it. B, that's how many pins that could be found in New York City on the day of the first tournament in 1722. Or C, as the organizer of the first professional bowling league in 1905 said, 10 is better than 9, and America is better than Europe.
Wow. I'm not so sure about B, where only 10 pins could be found on the day.
Right.
So I might strike out B.
You really don't like to lose, I can tell.
I'm going to just say C.
You're going to go with C, that they simply were being jingoistic. 10's better than 9, America's better than Europe.
But I don't know. There was the whole prohibition thing and all that, so that would make sense, too. I'll go with C.
You're sure about that?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm afraid it was A. It was nine pins. Gambling. Yeah, they added a pin to get around the ban on nine pins. All right, this is not a problem. You have two more chances.
I have to bowl a 300 from here on
exactly.
out.
All right, here we go. Why is Mike Capa of Racine, Wisconsin, a famous figure in the history of bowling? Was it A, he was the first person to drill holes in his ball after he kept dropping the thing on his foot?
Oh, that's fun.
B, he got the lowest score in the history of organized league play, a 2. Or C, he is believed to be the first person to throw a strike while holding a beer in his other hand.
Oh, no, this is so much fun.
Honestly, I don't care if I get this wrong. It's C.
Really? You're committed to that lifestyle choice? You don't care if it's right or wrong?
Yeah.
How committed are you?
I come out of the closet.
How committed are you to making that statement?
I'm committed 100% because that just needs to be right.
All right. I wish it were. He got the lowest score ever. It was 2.
Oh,
he bowled 18 gutter balls, just knocked down 2 pins.
Ooh. Oh, my God.
Lowest score ever in organized play. But you still have one more chance here. Here we go. Last question. In 1872, one Lucille Perk of Cleveland, Ohio, decided to go to her regular bowling night instead of doing something else. What was it that she turned down? She decided, A, not to compete in the Munich Olympics. B, she decided not to have dinner with President Nixon. Or C, she decided not to go to the hospital to deliver her baby, which ultimately happened between games 2 and 3.
What was her name?
Her name was Lucille Perk.
Lucille Perk.
Yes, Perk.
Gosh, I would. That sounds like she skipped out on the president. You know, he can't get in the way of a bowling night.
Is that your choice?
Yeah.
You're right. She decided not to have dinner with President Nixon.
Yes.
Mrs. Perk was married to the mayor of Cleveland. He had been invited to the White House, but Mrs. Perk decided she had better things to do. Corey, how did Kelly Slater do in our quiz?
Kelly got 1 right.
One right. I like this. I like this because, frankly, you're too perfect as it is. Yeah. And now we've discovered that you have one little weakness. That's it.
I will tell you, I was very nervous leading up to this because I'm thinking, gosh, I'm the only surfer to do this, and I could look really stupid here. And the stereotypes would all just come flying out of the closet.
Yeah, you get to travel the world surfing and playing golf in the company of beautiful women, and we're all sitting here going, he's dumb. That's what we're thinking.
Who looks stupid now?
Yeah, exactly. Ha ha.
Yeah.
Kelly Slater, by the way, is competing this weekend in Trestles, California in the Hurley Pro ASP World Tour. He is a 9-time world champion surfer and going for his 10th. Kelly Slater, thank you so much for being with us. What a pleasure to talk to you. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
In just a minute, Corey announces the next selection in the Wait, Wait Book Club. It's Rhyme and Punishment. In our listener limerick challenge, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roy, the community organization Acorn,
yes,
along a bete noire to the American right, got in real trouble this week when video was released showing them giving advice on how to get housing and hide income to 2 people who said they were what?
What really bothers me about Acorn is they don't seem to know what a pimp and a hoe look like.
Apparently. But it was, you're right, it was a pimp and a prostitute. If you are Acorn, the big community organizers, and you know that the entire vast right-wing conspiracy is out to get you, you'd figure you'd give your staff a warning. Look, guys, if 2 pasty white kids come in dressed like Superfly and his number one girl, and they keep pointing their purses at you and asking you to speak up a bit. Ixnay on the money laundering, okay?
But the pimp guy wasn't dressed like Superfly. He had on a blue blazer with his aunt's fur coat over it.
Don't all pimps wear fur coats over blazers? I could have sworn.
Not where I come from.
I could have sworn I saw that in a...
He's from the mean streets of, you know, Brooks Brothers.
Apparently.
Yeah. Right.
But no, the video, widely shown on Fox News and right-wing blogs, shows Acorn employees advising the couple to hide their illicit income. Acorn has fired the employees in the video. They've taken measures to help staffers identify future pimps and prostitutes. There's now at Acorn a pimp alert level in effect. It starts at purple. It goes up to leopard print. And they sent a company-wide missive. If the supposed prostitute's bling includes a little purity ring, call a supervisor.
It's a velour alert.
Mo, it's Fashion Week in New York. All the big designers and clothing companies, they put on gala runway shows to introduce their new lines. And among them this year, for the first time, is what wardrobe merchandising powerhouse?
Oh, my gosh. This has got to be something humorous.
Nah, not so much.
There's a blurb for our show. Wait, don't tell me. This has got to be something humorous. Mo Rocca, thank you.
No, it is... Oh, gosh. You had to give me a clue.
Well, it's sort of like from infomercials on late night to the runway.
Oh, okay. Is it the Snuggie?
It's the Snuggie.
Okay, very good.
That's right. That blanket with arms, ubiquitous on late night cable TV, has come to the fashion capital. Yes, they put on a whole glamorous fashion show.
How did they walk down the runway?
Well, they walked down the runway in the classic model look. They look like, of course, they were wearing fleece straitjackets because...
Well, it's more like a cowl and a monk's. It's a very Da Vinci Code.
It is, yeah. In addition, by the way, to the models wearing the Snuggies, the show also showed off children wearing them and dogs. Oh. Apparently, we're not the only species with no shame. By the way, and this is true, the Snuggies' huge success has inspired a raft of imitators, including something called the Slanket, which to me sounds more like a model who sleeps around.
What is a slanket?
A slanket's like a Snuggie.
Is
it like snake skin?
I don't know. Maybe that's a good idea.
The skanket is split up the
skanket.
Side.
Yeah, exactly.
Skanket.
It's what the fake prostitutes going to Acorn wear. Here, put on your skanket and we'll fool them. Slank it, I want to say.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts. And I'm too sexy for Milan. Too sexy for Milan.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago and upcoming shows in Pasadena and Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, you're in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ann Donjacor from San Francisco.
Hey, how are things in beautiful San Francisco?
They're beautiful, actually.
I know how that is.
Quiet, yeah.
What do you do there?
I am an instructor of human growth anatomy.
Oh, wow. So you're one of the people who dissect cadavers.
Mm. We do, yeah. Yep.
Wow.
You cut right to the chase.
You do. Do you have to help the first-year students through the initial icky response?
Yes, although the medical students at UCSF are very enthusiastic in general, and we kind of have to sometimes sort of slow them down a little bit.
Oh, Lord.
Let me at him.
I would have to take...
Sponsored by Toro.
I would need a tutorial on suppressing the gag reflex.
Well, welcome to the show. And now Corey Flintoff, filling in for Carl Castle, is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
I think so.
Here is your first limerick.
I've been subway bound more than an hour. Now there's grime on me I'd like to scour. But for reasons microbial, I've got hydrophobia. See, germs like to hide in my...
shower.
Right! Tired of showering alone? Good news, you're not. According to Dr. Norman Pace, a microbiologist at the University of Colorado, the typical showerhead sprays you with millions of bacteria that live inside it. In fact, Pace's research shows it is actually healthier to breathe the air in the New York City subway than to breathe the air in your own shower. Never fear, though, Pace says. Sure, you're coating yourself in bacteria every morning, but, quote, the yuck factor isn't nearly as great as people may think it is, unquote. He added that despite his findings, he still showers every day, just after breakfast and right before he has himself sandblasted. Here is your next limerick.
You know, allergies really are pleasing. What I say, not tonight, I'm not teasing. So do not say piffle, it's only the sniffles. I'm not up for romance when I'm...
sneezing.
Right! Those scientists have done it again. A new study published in the latest edition of Allergy and Asthma Proceedings shows that allergies can have a negative effect on people's sex lives. According to the lead researcher, quote, if you can't breathe and your nose is running and your eyes are itchy and you're sneezing and you feel awful and you feel tired, you don't feel very sexy, unquote.
Thank goodness for the study.
I'd like to share a public service announcement that I saw on television. When you have to sneeze, you should sneeze into the inside of your elbow.
Is this true?
Yeah.
Elmo was teaching this to school children.
That's what I
heard. Don't sneeze into your hands, because then you touch people.
Yeah.
Sneeze into the inside of your elbow, and then they might consent to go to bed with you. I'm not following here.
Maybe you could sneeze into someone else's elbow.
Yeah. That's sexy.
Or sneeze into their Elmo.
The researchers behind this groundbreaking study hope that their findings will raise awareness. Unfortunately, the findings do come too late to save Playboy magazine from the dismal sales of their upcoming October issue. It featured a pictorial of cold sufferers called snotty hotties. Here is your last limerick.
My monkey life would be much duller but for sprinkles right here on my crawler. I've heard it's been said, some are green, some are red. I can't tell, because I cannot see...
color.
Right. Huh. We can't do much for monkeys. We can't give them their jungles back. We can't teach them to wear Snuggies. But now we can save them from fashion faux pas caused by their color blindness. Scientists at the University of Washington have used gene therapy to cure Dalton and Sam, the squirrel monkeys, of their red-green color blindness. Researchers injected human genes into their eyes, and for the first time, Dalton and Sam were able to see the color red. Hmm. Scientists hope to eventually use the process to cure color blindness in humans, but they stressed the need for caution in using this therapy. They cited baboons who've received the injections and immediately started saying, "Oh my God, does my butt always look like that?"
Well, this is remarkable because this is very useful because now monkeys will be able to tell when bananas are ripe.
That's so important. Yes.
Yeah.
Corey, how did Anna do in our quiz?
Anna got all three right, so she wins Carl Castle's voice on her home answering
machine. Well done, Anna. Hey. Thank you so much. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Corey, can you give us the scores?
Amy and Mo are tied with 3 each, and Roy has 2.
All right. Here we go. You're in third place, Roy, so you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. First Lady Michelle Obama announced she will fly to Copenhagen in 2 weeks to support Chicago's bid for the 2016 blank.
Olympics.
Right. On Wednesday, President Obama said he would not rush into a decision whether or not to send more troops to blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. Best known for his roles in the movies Ghost and Dirty Dancing, blank died this week at age 57.
Patrick Swayze.
Right. A federal judge rejected a settlement between the SEC and Bank of America after learning of undisclosed executive blank.
Bonuses.
Right. In a town hall confrontation caught on YouTube, California Representative Pete Stark can be seen telling a constituent blank.
That the constituent is lying.
No, he says, I wouldn't dignify you by, guess what, that's right, peeing on your leg, it wouldn't be worth wasting the urine. That's what he said. Hmm. On Wednesday, Republican Linda McMahon, the CEO of blank, announced her campaign for the Senate seat in Connecticut.
The CEO of, I have no earthly idea.
World Wrestling Entertainment.
Oh.
After she was fined for a blistering attack against a line judge at the U.S. Open, blank apologized to the judge, her opponent, and her fans.
Serena Williams.
Right. Tensions are mounting as Germans and Austrians say they are receiving fewer blanks than the British.
I don't know. Letters.
No. Baked beans.
Oh.
German baked bean lovers suspect that their cans of Heinz baked beans were inferior to the British version. So the Austrian Times newspaper did a comparison. The results were shocking. Germans were getting fewer beans, and those beans were of lower quality in a paler, more watery broth.
Huh.
Germans immediately expressed their outrage to Heinz. They launched the typical letter-writing campaign and sent a blitzkrieg of bean-fueled German tourists to England. Corey, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy got 5 right for 10 more points, so he now has 12 points and the lead.
Oh, very good. All right, we have flipped a coin. Mo has elected to go third, so Amy, you're up next. Fill in the blank. The green zone in Iraq was bombed just hours after blank arrived for a visit.
Joe Biden.
Right. Jimmy Carter was criticized this week for blaming Representative Joe Wilson's outburst on blank.
Racism.
Right. President Obama announced Thursday that he was scrapping President Bush's plans for an Eastern European blank.
Summit.
No, missile defense system.
Right.
Washington, D.C. braced for a surge of tourists inspired by the lost symbol, the new book by blank released this week.
Dan Brown.
Right. Wisconsin authorities have decided not to extradite or charge a Montana woman who allegedly blanked at a Wisconsin gas station.
Involves cheese, to be sure.
She dressed up like a gorilla and stole a giant banana.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Travers, part of the folk trio blank, died at age 72 this week.
Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Right. Investigators are wondering why the San Diego County Sheriff's Office recently stationed a high-tech sonic weapon at a blank.
A high-tech sonic weapon at an elementary school.
No, at a sandcastle building competition. Is it excessive force to bring an ear-piercing sonic cannon to a sandcastle building competition? Not, according to the San Diego Sheriff. The riot control device provided more than enough muscle to quell dissent at the castle building contest. In fact, the device was so successful, the U.S. Open has requested permission to use it at Serena Williams' next match. Corey, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy got 4 right for 8 more points. She now has 11 points, but Roy still has the lead with 12.
All right, so how many then does Mo Rocca need to win this thing?
I am so sorry, Amy.
Mo needs to get 5 right.
Here we go, Mo. This is for the game.
Yes.
Fill in the blank. On Tuesday, Ben Bernanke announced that the blank is, quote, likely over.
The recession.
Right. A lab technician was arrested Thursday in connection with the murder of a student at blank.
Yale.
Right. 3 months after leaving as host of The Tonight Show, blank's new and very similar show debuted.
Jay Leno.
Right. The FDA approved a new vaccine to prevent blank on Tuesday.
H1N1.
Right. The swine flu. A German family heard screams coming from the basement. Thought a burglar had gotten trapped, but the screams turned out to be coming from blank.
Well, it's got to be something unlikely. A rat-skeller.
No, a hedgehog with his head trapped in a yogurt container.
Oh, yeah.
That happens. The Long Island beach house belonging to imprisoned money manager blank sold for more than $8.75 million this week.
Bernie Madoff.
He made off with it. Although he was injured in a Dancing with the Stars rehearsal, blank plans to go on with the show.
Tom DeLay.
Right. According to a new study, naming your daughter blank gives her 5 times better chance of success in a legal career.
Tonya.
No. Bruce. According to the study published in the American Law and Economics Review, women with masculine names are more successful in the legal profession. So naming your baby Bruce
is not a masculine name.
Well, tell that to Mr. Springsteen. So naming your baby Bruce instead of Sue increases her chances of success by a factor of 5. Primarily because your daughter Bruce will need that legal degree to successfully sue the people who harass her for having the name Bruce.
So, okay, so this is why Carlos Sonia Sotomayor.
Exactly, has done so well. Corey, did Mo do well enough to win?
He did. Mo got 6 right for 12 more points, a total of 15. So Mo is this
week's champion. I can't believe it. I want to thank everyone on the show.
Oh, excuse me. I'll let you finish, but Roy was awesome. So go ahead and finish your speech. Sorry.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what Kanye West's next controversial move is going to be. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And VISTA, volunteers in service to America, working to end poverty. Learn more about VISTA at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Ashley Refield. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. B.J. Lideman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Acton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, how will Kanye West get controversial next time? Mo Rocca.
When Serena Williams wins Wimbledon next year, Kanye West will rip the trophy out of her hands, declare Beyonce the rightful winner, and end up with a tennis ball shoved down his throat.
Amy Dickinson.
Kanye West is going to storm the stage at the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony and yell, Boutros Boutros Ghali was robbed!
Roy Blunt Jr.
He will break into the prince's house and steal his glyph.
Is that what it is, a glyph?
Well, it's a glyph. But that's the source of all of Prince's power, Roy.
And if Kanye does any of that, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Corey Flintoff. You did a great job. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Amy Dickinson, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will be back next week with Carl Castle from Santa Barbara, California. We'll see you from there. This is NPR, National Public Radio.